Okay.
Yeah, you do sound like you have a southern
accent. Isn't that awful?
No, it's... Yes, it is.
And well, that comes from living in the South and being around a lot of black folks.
Okay. I'll buy that. I wanted to ask you just a few questions, and we'll shut this off at any time and continue later while you're playing your game, okay?
Yes.
All right. How about some basic biographical information on you first? Birthday, birthplace, brothers and sisters, stuff like that.
Well, I was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota, mm-hmm. July 29th, 1911.
July 29th?
January 29th. Okay. 1911, and it was on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. And it was in the... I'm trying to think of the name of the hospital. I used to know it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Minneapolis Hospital?
Mm-mm.
St. Paul?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Minneapolis Hospital. Asbury? Was there an Asbury Hospital?
Doesn't ring a bell with me, but if you do think of it later, you can just pop it in. We'll just go with Asbury for now.
No, I don't want to leave that in there because I can't remember the name of the hospital right this minute. But it's probably on my birth certificate.
I'm sure it is. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have two brothers. My mother had I don't know whether it was the second or third child that she lost. Mm-hmm. And
so you're talking about in between your two brothers who are younger than you?
Yeah, I'm the oldest. Johnny's 13 months younger. Mm-hmm. And James is 3.5 years younger.
Okay. And no sisters?
No, never had any sisters.
Okay.
I think this baby my mother lost was a boy, but I don't remember.
In
it never was at the point where it could live.
Okay,
it was like a miscarriage.
Uh-huh. In one sentence, describe your father, or as briefly as you can.
A strong, intelligent, fiercely independent man.
Do the same with your mother and your brothers.
Well, my mother was a very loving, kind, extremely well-bred lady. Mm-hmm. I don't think she ever chewed gum in her life. Mm-hmm. I've never heard her use a slang word, mm-hmm. and certainly never profane language. And, she had the ability to be firm, but she inspired a lot of confidence, and you felt free talking to her, saying things to her that you might not have said to some others.
Sounds like a nice lady. How about...
But she had extremely high morals.
Mm-hmm. How about your brothers?
Well, as we were coming up, we were all intensely loyal to one another. And we were since all of our growing up years, we were always the only blacks in the neighborhood or the only blacks in the school. Mm-hmm. So our goal was to protect one another. And I can remember one time...
Closely knit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I can remember one time when... Now, my two brothers... A good many years of their growing up years, they were the same size. My younger brother was taller than my older brother. And from the back, people would think they were twins. Mm-hmm. And as a result, there was a lot of picking on each other that went on. But as James got taller, Johnny stopped. because my brother James was 6 feet tall, mm-hmm. at least. And but I can remember one day I was helping my mother clean house, and we had a secret whistle. And I heard that whistle, and I ran out of the back door of the house. I had an apron on, tied around my waist, and a dust cap on my head, and I ran down the alley. And here some kids were taunting my two brothers, my oldest brother. And And so, and of course, my mother didn't know what happened. And she started running after me. And I was down there just giving everybody a hard time.
I bet.
Don't pick on my brother because I will fight you and all that kind of stuff. And I would.
Mm-hmm.
And another time, my brother and I, this is my oldest brother, we were coming home from school and I was on one side of the street with my friends. He was on the other side with his friends. And all of a sudden, this boy had him down in the snow and was beating on him. And I ran across the street and jumped on this boy, got on top of him, and I beat him so badly he couldn't come to school the next day. And he was a boy from my homeroom. He sat across the aisle from me, and I can see him right today. He had red hair and a lot of freckles. But I'll bet you one thing, nobody else bothered my brother.
Okay.
Now that's the way we were. You didn't. And my father had that as a motto, you know, divided we stand. I mean, united we stand, divided we fall. Well, no matter what happened, we presented a united front.
Okay, that's interesting. Now, individually, I'd like you to describe your older brother, the oldest brother, John, right?
Well, I don't know how to describe him individually. What do you mean?
Well, you described your mother and your father.
Well,
in one sentence. Try him.
He was never a good money manager, I can tell you that.
Okay.
Because when we were, you know, teenagers, we all had allowances, and he was always borrowing money from me that he never wanted to pay it back. And I would be screaming and hollering because he wouldn't pay me my money back.
Mm-hmm.
And finally my mother told me, don't let him have any more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we weren't talking about maybe 10 cents or a quarter or something
right.
like that. But back in those days, that was big money. And so we would have it, you know. And so I said, no. And he asked me to lend him this. I said, no, because you don't ever want to pay anything back. And see, I would always have my little stash.
Mm.
Now, my baby brother, the biggest thing I can remember about him growing when we were growing up, you know, like 14, 15, 16 years old, he would go in my room and take my jewelry and go out there and give it to some little girl he was admiring. And I looked at one day and saw my beads on this girl. And came home and had a hysterics. Hysterics! And so, anyhow, my father then told him, don't you ever cross the door sill of your sister's room. Because if you go in there, we go into the garage. That meant getting whipped.
Sounds like you three had an interesting, fun, and...
Oh, yes.
And loving relationship as you were growing up.
Oh, yes, yes, we did. And we were very, very together.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we had a really good home.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't rich or anything like that, but we had a comfortable home. We always had plenty to eat,
mm-hmm.
plenty heat in the wintertime, and plenty cool in the summertime, because every room had an electric fan in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, if one had skates, everybody had skates.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when ukuleles were in. My father bought one ukulele and he ended up buying two more because there's no such thing as buying something for one child and the other's not getting it. And my brothers were jealous of me when they were little because I always had a lot of dolls. And I had dolls that were big as babies.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother would give me some baby clothes that nobody in the world would want. And my brothers would just have a fit because she didn't give them anything. And that kind of little...
Sibling rivalry.
Yes, that went on. We'd sit down to the table to have dinner, and we always sat down together. There was none of this such thing as somebody running in, dipping in the pot, get something, and running out and all that kind of stuff, or go someplace to sit down and eat.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have nothing like that. We all sat down at the table at the same time. Sometimes my father wouldn't be there because he had a business. And he'd be tied up on his jobs. So he wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother couldn't keep us waiting and waiting. She'd wait long as she could. But she dished up the dinner, and we always had to say the blessing before we ate. I learned to say that when I probably learned to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we always, that was just automatic. And we all had turns. Like, one had breakfast, someone else had lunch, and I had dinner.
Did you ever have anything other than dinner? Or did you...
No, that was our time to say the blessing.
Okay. You mentioned that your father wasn't always present at dinner time because of his job.
Yeah, and sometimes for breakfast he might not be there because he'd get up real early in the morning and go out to the job, take the men out there. And
well, that brings me to my next question. What did your father do for a living?
Well, he was a window cleaning contractor, and he had a business. And he used to clean and paint scrape windows on all these big buildings and things all over the state, not just the Twin Cities. And my mother would figure the jobs. So he'd go out and get the measurements, measure everything, count the windows. That's what we did, so much per minute. And then he'd come in, and she would figure everything up, and she would write up the contract.
She was more or less his accountant.
Well, I wouldn't say she was an accountant, but she knew how to. My mother had a high school education, which was, in her day, that was the epitome of education.
I'm sure.
And of course, my mother came out of a wealthy family, so she had been exposed to a lot of things, and she traveled a lot. Mm-hmm. My father was not an educated man, but he was a man that if he'd had an education, well, there's no telling where he would have gone in life.
Your father was a self-made man.
Absolutely, because I doubt if he went past the third grade. But he had an extremely high IQ, and he really could understand things. And to hear him talk, the command of the English language, I'm going to tell you.
Very nice.
He was really something.
How did your father and mother meet? Do you know?
Well, my father's always sort of had businesses. And he used to have a business of tending furnaces. And these wealthy people like out in Minnetonka, Lake of the Isles, all that kind of thing. Especially Lake of the Isles, wealthy homes, they had these furnaces, and everybody burned coal in those days. So you had somebody take care of the furnace. And he had a whole string of places like that. Mm-hmm. And he was so proud of his children, because he had a big sled, and he used to ride a bicycle, and put us all in this sled behind the bicycle, and take us with him, because he was showing us off.
Okay, but my question was,
all right, how did they meet?
Yes.
All right, well, he was in the basement, and they always had an outside door that went to the basement. He was in the basement stoking the furnace, and he kept hearing this noise over his head. Rolling noise. Room, 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 room. And he couldn't imagine what it was, so he came up the basement stairs and he knocked on the door. And my mother opened the door. And she and her aunt were visiting some friends there. And what she was doing, see, all kitchens had wooden floors. What she was doing was roller skating on the kitchen floor. And that's how they met. And from that on, it blossomed into a romance.
What you say he used to contract in these wealthy neighborhoods around Minneapolis and St. Paul area, doing the furnace work and whatnot?
No, he had a business up where he took care of furnaces. Like I have a gardener.
I understand that. What I'm asking, what I'm leading up to by asking that, where was your mother visiting when he was working?
I don't know the name of the people.
Okay.
All I know is that she and her aunt were visiting this family. And it was some wealthy family, because my Aunt Marie was a wealthy woman.
Okay.
And she brought my mother from Germany when my mother was 15 years old. She didn't have any children of her own.
Okay.
And her mother allowed her to go to America. And so my mother lived in Chicago, one of the suburbs.
Right.
I can't think of the name of it now, but it was a suburb. Fancy. And then she and my Aunt Marie traveled a lot. And they were visiting some friends in Minneapolis.
Okay.
And they were some of these wealthy people. And of course, you know, when my mother ran off and married my father, it was a commotion.
Back then, I imagine interracial marriages were
rare. They were not rare. They had quite a few of them.
Okay.
Because they had a club called the Maple Leaf Club. And in this club were all interracial couples.
In Minneapolis? Interesting.
But her family, her Aunt Marie, and they had lawyers and everything. Oh, I mean, it was a whoop-de-doo.
They didn't want the marriage.
Well, of course not.
Okay.
But see, once she was married, that was it. My mother was 21 years old, and I was born when she was 22. And she didn't even know. You could even tell she was pregnant because she was so small, and she was a small woman. When I say small, I mean slender. And she could, well, she was telling me she could wear a tight-fitting coat, and people wouldn't know she was pregnant. I only weighed 3 pounds when I was born.
You're kidding.
And I was not considered a premature baby, because back in those days, you weren't considered premature unless you came ahead of time. I was a full-term baby, but I was tiny.
I guess.
And my father said, he used to talk about my mother so scared of me, she'd carry me around on a little pillow. And my father said, well, I could put you in that teapot over there, you were so little. And they were scared to death of me.
Yeah. I mean, as far as whether you would make it.
No, because I was so tiny.
Well, they were just afraid because you were so fragile.
Yes, and my mother didn't know anything about babies.
Yeah.
I don't think my father knew anything either, but he was good at going out and getting somebody that did know.
Okay.
That's one thing about it.
I suppose. Now, you said your mother came from Germany. Where did your father come from?
He was born at the foot of, wait a minute, of the Blue Ridge Mountains in Greene County, Virginia.
Mm.
That's where he was born.
That's
the nearest thing I have to his birthplace.
Okay.
And he was one of a lot of children in the family. And his mother died when he was 15 years old, and I'm named for her.
Mm-hmm.
And he just couldn't stand his father and the rest of them, so he left home and went to Pittsburgh to stay with an aunt. But she was so strict on him and everything, because he thought he was a man, that he left and joined the Army, and he was in the Spanish-American War in Wyoming.
Was he still holding the name Mackay when he was in the Army? I understand there was a name change.
Yes, there was a name change. When he got settled in Minneapolis, I guess that's when he did it, he went to court and had his name changed to M.C., capital H-I-E. When the original name was M-I-C-H-I-E, as I recall. But there's lots of relatives on the East Coast, but he never would go find him. My mother and we kids, we used to sit around and beg him, let's go find some of your kinfolk. Because we knew my mother's family. Because Aunt Marie made up, and she used to come visit us. And my mother had a brother in Chicago that came to America. And he used to come from Chicago and visit us. And my mother had a half-sister, because her mother, I think her real father died, and her mother remarried, and she had Clara, who was my mother's half-sister. Clara lived with us when she first came to America.
Mm-hmm.
And then she married a Swede named Johnson or Peterson, I don't remember now, because I haven't seen that Clara in years.
No, this Clara and this Peterson fellow. That is his last name that she married. They still live in the state of Minnesota?
As far as I know, they still live in Minneapolis. I don't know. Johnny might know something about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen Aunt Clara in years, and she had 2 or 3 children by this man. She was a very, very good-looking, dark-haired girl. She had dark hair. But she was very good-looking. But she was a lot younger than my mother, of course. And, but she lived with us until she got herself together. And then I don't remember what she did. She moved. I know she didn't live with us anymore because I was about 10 years old, maybe 11, something like that.
I get the idea that once she left, Clara, that is, or married this man or whatever, that there seemed to be a lapse in communication between Clara and
No. She and my mother, she used to come over. And my mother would go there, but you see, all of this, you know, wasn't that important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And after my mother died, it's when I lost track of her.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I wasn't in Minneapolis either, see?
Well, that leads me to the next question. Did you leave home after you graduated from high school?
No.
Okay, tell me what you, Francis,
That was unthinkable in those days. If you weren't married, you stayed with your family.
Okay, fine. Well, you graduated from South, right?
Yeah, and I went to the University of Minnesota.
Okay.
And I was the first black to be admitted to the School of Nursing, and there was a lot of commotion about it. And Dorothy Brown, who was head resident of Phil Sweetie House, was a real good friend of our family, and she got on it, and it ended up with Senator Stockwell finding out about it, and he couldn't believe it, and they had written me a letter. From the director of the school nurse, they had written me a letter stating that they did not admit black students and that she thought I would be much happier in the school of nursing at Kansas City Hospital, Kansas City General Hospital number 2. And, of course, that infuriated everybody. And Senator Stockwell then and Dorothy Brown got on. Is her name Dorothy Brown? Gertrude Brown. Gertrude Brown was her first name.
From Phyllis Wheaton.
From Phyllis Wheaton. She was the first head resident we had when Phyllis Wheaton first started.
Okay.
And it ended up with Senator Stockwell taking me. He brought it up in the legislature and they didn't believe it. And he brought me, and I was sitting up there on the podium. So everybody in the legislature, and there was all these hundreds of faces, and I was scared to death.
I bet.
But Gertrude Brown was with me. And so they could actually see me. And he read that letter to them. And oh my, it was commotion. And they ordered the Board of Regents to admit me to the School of Nursing immediately. School had started in September, and I think this was the latter part of October that I was admitted to the university. And I was so scared, because I was an extremely shy person. Mm-hmm. And my father had to take me out to the campus and go with me to get me registered and get my schedules all straightened out and all that kind of stuff. See, he didn't have any fear of anybody or anything.
I've heard.
That's right. That's right. Now, my mother was on the quiet side. And
okay, we're back.
What a lovely speaking voice.
You do just fine, Francis. If you could try and talk a little bit more directly into this corner of the machine, it would probably sound more lovely, or whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
Let me finish now. I asked you if you left home after high school, and you obviously told me not.
Let me put another foreword in there.
Okay.
All through high school, I never had but one dream. That was to go to college.
All right. Now, obviously, you went to U of M School of Nursing.
And I finished 4 years of high school and 3.5 years by going to summer school.
Mm-hmm.
I could have finished in 3 years if I had thought about it early enough. But you had to have so many units in order to graduate.
Absolutely.
And, but I didn't have the one thing in mind was to go to college. The rest of my girlfriends were not like that. All they thought about was getting married and having babies.
Did you have an idea of what you wanted to take in college, or you just wanted to be further educated than high school? That was your whole focus.
Right. Now, I had, in my senior year, I had my homeroom teacher.
This is high school we're talking about.
Yeah. Was Miss Mary. I can't think of her last name right now, but she was extremely fond of me, and I used to do mark her papers and put her grades in the grade book and do all that paperwork for her. I stay after school doing paperwork for her. And she is the one that made the decision about what I was going to be. I wanted to be a social worker because Gertrude Brown was my idol.
Tell us with me.
Yeah. I wanted to be a social worker. My mother didn't want me to be a social worker because she said, they never get married, and I want you to get married and have children.
Okay.
See, my mother was of the old school. She wanted me to be educated because I listened to this all my life. I want you to go to school. I want you to learn how to take care of yourself because I don't want you to be
What did she mean by what she said?
I don't want you to be under the thumb of any man.
Okay.
Because if you're helpless, there's nothing you can do if you get into a bad marriage, for an example. But she wanted me to be married. She wanted me to have a family. But she...
It seemed like she wanted you to be in control of your own destiny.
Yeah, she wanted me to be... what's the word I'm looking for?
Why don't we put that in the category of the hospital you were born in, if you think of it as you go along,
yeah.
Just stick it in.
And she wanted me to be independent and be in control of my life.
All right.
And
now,
she said, and you are going to school.
Okay.
So I came up with that idea of wanting to go to school and to go to college was the epitome of my life, really. And so my father wanted me to be a teacher. I said, well, I don't want to be a teacher because, you know, I don't like all these things that teachers have to do because I used to help my homeroom teacher all the time and I knew about all the paperwork and things like that. I wanted to be a social worker. So anyhow, Miss Mary, isn't that funny? I can't think of her last name. Anyhow, she is the one who said, well, how about being a nurse? I said, well, I don't know, because she was Irish. She had an Irish last name. Because I didn't know anything about nursing. Never been around sick people, never been inside of a hospital. And except when my mother had this surgery. And so she said, well, we'll write a letter. And she helped me to write a letter to the School of Nursing at the University of Minnesota requesting admission.
Okay.
Now, that's how that started.
All right. Now, when you got to the U of M, how you got a teaching or a nurse's certificate, a registered nurse's certificate as
I had a degree in nursing.
Okay. Now, after you finished the curriculum at the University of Minnesota, what happened after that?
Well, it was during the Depression, so there weren't any jobs. Everybody was on WPA or something like that. And since there weren't any, I had a lot of applications in for jobs. But since there weren't any jobs, then I went to work, and my mother cried. I can see her right today, sitting in the dining room chair, just crying, when I got this job working as a maid in somebody's house. And I just told my mother and father, oh, they just had a fit.
Okay, continue.
But I just told my mother and father, I said, well, listen, now you have educated me, paid money, tuition, books, clothes, and I was considered a very well-dressed young lady because my father really doted on me, I'm going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lots of clothes. And I said, I am not going to continue to be a burden. I am going to work. And see, we had this expression about staying out of the white folks' kitchen. And I said, well, I don't care. It's money. And I don't have any problem with that. And I can remember Rachel James. I don't know if you know the James family. They're in St. Paul. They're in my league.
Yeah.
But Rachel lives in Los Angeles. She's...
What about back then?
But anyhow, we were all very friendly. And, oh, Rachel and her mother thought it was terrible. Because Rachel was sitting there like I. We were good friends all through college. And... because she couldn't get a job either. And they thought it was terrible that I was going out here cooking in the white folks' kitchen. I said, well, I like money, and I like this, and I like the other thing, and my parents have done enough for me, and so I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Interesting. How long did you work before you found the job that you were qualified?
Then I left, I got a job. My next job was a stock girl in a real fancy, expensive dress shop. I had a girlfriend that worked downtown.
In Minneapolis?
Yeah. And I can't think of the name of it now. But anyhow, she got me this job as a stock girl. And her name was Florence. Can't think of her name. Because she's still there. Well, you probably know her. But they lived about three blocks from our house.
Mm-hmm. She's not the lady that married Brutus Cassius?
Yes.
Okay.
Florence Cassius. Yeah. Thought you'd know her.
Well, I don't know very many Florences, but I do remember her.
Yeah, she's still alive?
I'm not sure. I know Brutus is gone, and I see their son Larry every so often. And,
She had two or three children.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, she got you the job at the floor?
She got me the job at this fancy dress shop. Okay. And we used to walk downtown, because she was a great walker. We used to walk downtown, if you can imagine, to Nicollet Avenue, downtown, and walk back home every night, and I'd just be so tired. I said, ooh. She said, no, we're going to walk. And so we walked. And I worked down there in that dress shop, I guess, close to a year. I don't even remember. And all of a sudden, I got a chance. I got called for a job at the Minneapolis General Hospital. At the Minneapolis General Hospital, they didn't have any blacks even wiping the floor. So I was the first black in there, and I went in there as a supervisor.
Great.
That was my first job. And I was a supervisor in the outpatient department, and I had three major clinics under my direction. And the woman who was the director of nursing service, or the director of nursing, we called it then, she had been one of my teachers when I was at the university. So she knew my capabilities. And I used to teach student nurses and student doctors, clinic routine, and teach these doctors how to do a vaginal examination and things of that sort, because they didn't even know how to put speculum in, and teach the student nurses how to drape patients. The various activities connected with working with patients in an outpatient facility. Because this was the clinic. This was not the hospital. I mean, it wasn't where the patients were in bed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we would, it was a very pleasant experience. And I never had any kind of flap or anything like that. It was always cooperation and a pleasant experience.
An organized environment.
Oh yes. It was very nice. And
how long did you work there?
Oh, I guess.
And why did you leave?
Because I was. Let me tell you, when I was a student nurse.
Sure.
It was so funny because so many white people, especially when they got out of Minneapolis, in rural areas outside of Minneapolis, had never seen a black person. The only black person they'd ever seen was this aborigine that they would have in the history books.
National Geographic or something.
No, yeah. Not National Geographic, but in those history books for school. I mean, they all showed them as a native.
Yeah.
Native, you know, one of these. It was never anything that was what you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'd be going down the hall, people would be popping out of their office doors. Look at this old black nurse, black student nurse that they had in the hospital. So I was an object of a great deal of curiosity.
Raised a few eyebrows, did you?
Oh yes. But everybody was super nice.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in the paper and everything, so everybody knew all about me, and much more than I knew about them.
Mm-hmm.
And
can you tell me roughly the year you started at General Hospital? What year it was?
I guess I had been out of school about. I had graduated in June of 1932.
Worked in the kitchen and then down at the dress shop.
And I would say it probably was a year after I had graduated, before I got this job.
33 or 34.
Something like that.
Okay. Now, you eventually left General Hospital.
Well, the reason I left, we had an association, National Association of Colored Nurses, because the White Association of Nurses, of course, didn't admit me. See, I came up in an era of great prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I have been exposed to all of these things because NAACP, the Minneapolis Sunday Forum was a forerunner of the NAACP. And every fourth Sunday of the month, we would go to the Minneapolis Sunday Forum, which was a black organization. And my father and mother were the kind of people, they took us everywhere they went. We have to sit on the front row and listen to this boring 2 hours and not move a muscle because my father just look at you, and you didn't want him looking at you, because that meant you'd be in trouble when you got home. And we had to be quiet and sit there. And so that eventually evolved into the NAACP. Other black leaders who were well known, like, what's this man named Randolph?
I don't know who he is.
Well, he'd been around in your time.
Okay.
He died. I think he's dead. I'm not sure about that.
What was his claim to fame?
He was a great black leader.
Yeah, in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
Oh, nationally. And I can remember him coming to some thing when I was coming up and sitting on our front porch with my father. See, my father was very militant. And that's right. And the thing is, A. Philip Randolph.
Oh, sure.
Now you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so you see, and the Urban League, that was around. And so you see, I was exposed to the black aura.
Okay, but you said something about this group of black nurses.
Yeah, that was the National Council of Colored Nurses.
Okay.
And so they had a national meeting in New Orleans, and I was invited to be one of the speakers for this meeting. That's how I happened to go to New Orleans. Of course, I was real excited. While I was there, before I left, I was offered a job at Blount Goodrich Hospital in New Orleans. And so I was excited because, see, I wanted to go south. I wanted to see for myself what this was all about. Because all we could hear about was folks being lynched.
Yeah.
And all the things that went on inside. We heard all about that.
Sure.
And I wanted to see for myself. So when I came back, my mother was so nervous about me even going to this meeting. I went with another girl who, I'm trying to think, how did I meet her? I don't remember now. But she eventually was at Wilberforce in Ohio.
Okay.
But she was in Chicago at this particular time. I don't remember how I met her. It's been so long that I haven't even thought about things like this.
Let me stop you for 1 minute. While you were contemplating switching from...
No, I didn't contemplate. I made a decision.
Fine. At the time, you were working at General Hospital and got offered the job in Louisiana. What were your brothers doing?
Well,
Johnny first.
He was working. Mm-hmm. See, they always worked. Now, Johnny didn't go to school past high school because Dr. Judy, who was a dentist, he and his wife were friends of ours. And Dr. Judy and his wife did not have any children. And they wanted to put him through dental school and the University of Minnesota. And he would not do it, because he didn't like working in people's mouths. That's the way he would express it.
Okay, so
now, he really wanted to go to school to be in engineering. And my mother told him, no, because you'll never get a job as an engineer. Because at that time, you know, they didn't give black engineers anything.
Okay.
And I really think he should have been allowed to do it, but that was the kind of thinking that went on at that time, that you went into areas where you knew you could get employment.
So what about James?
And James, now he finished high school, but you know, he got in trouble,
mm-hmm.
which was not true.
Yeah, I heard about the bad rap and everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was not true. And it was a terrible thing.
Was he in jail when you were in Louisiana?
No, he was out by that time.
Okay.
And
because he was at
St. Cloud. That's where he was.
Now, I'm under the impression that when your mother died, he was in jail.
Yeah, he was at St. Cloud. Mm-hmm.
So.
But they brought him down to see her before she died.
Okay. So that says that you were in Louisiana when your mother got sick.
No, I was in Detroit, Michigan.
So did you go from Minneapolis to Detroit to Louisiana?
No.
All right.
I went from Minneapolis to Louisiana, and I was in New Orleans for 2 years.
Okay.
And then I left, because when I came back, I said I'd been offered this job, and I was all excited. My mother just sat, she cried for babies.
Scared for her baby.
That's right.
Okay.
And she just, oh, she just cried for days. I said, well, Mom, I got to go. Because this is an opportunity that I've always wanted. I want to work with black people. And my father went out and bought a trunk, a wardrobe trunk, and brought it home. Now, he was all for me going. But my mother cried for a week. I'm going to tell you, she really did. But I just knew this was a thing I had to do. And I was 22.
Eyes wide open.
That's right. Oh, I thought I knew everything.
So tell me about the New Orleans Louisiana experience. Now, this was in what city?
New Orleans.
In New Orleans. And the name of the hospital?
Flint Goodrich.
Okay.
And it was a terrible experience for me because I went there like, you know, I'm the savior. You know what I mean? I've had all this wonderful training at the University of Minnesota, all this fabulous exposure and everything, and I'm going to come down and share this with people who never had the opportunities I had. And when I got there, they didn't have a school of nursing anymore. They had closed it. But all of the nurses that worked there had been graduates of Flint Goodrich School of Nursing. And I was immediately hated because, number one, I was from the North. Number two, I'd gone to a black school, and let's see, what was the third thing? I mean, I had gone to a white school. Oh, yeah, and I wasn't, you know, real black, because I was about 10 shades lighter than I am now. Because if I'd show you my stomach, you'd see how light I was.
Okay.
And then I didn't have bad hair either.
All those little stereotypes really, really loomed large back then, didn't they?
They gave me a hard time.
Okay. When you say they, you're talking your staff.
Yes, because I was a supervisor.
Your job position was as a supervisor of Flint Goodrich Hospital.
No, I was a supervisor of female medicine.
Okay.
And they gave me a hard time. Mm-hmm. This is where I learned to stand up for myself.
Okay.
But all before then, I had never had the need to stand up for myself, and I was really a fragile person. And I was this kind of person, if I bought a pair of gloves and they weren't right, my mother would have to go with me to take them back. Or she'd have to take them back. But I said, Mom, I just can't do it. I just can't.
Yeah.
I'm too embarrassed. And so, that's how I was. And, you know, if I was going to go shopping for anything, I'd always have my mother to meet me and help me pick out whatever I was going to get.
Now that you were out of the nest.
No, I mean, this is when I was at home. I was still living at home, but I was working.
Yeah, but I mean, when you went down to New Orleans.
Oh, well, that.
All of a sudden, you're like in a totally different environment.
Oh, yes. And they gave me a hard time.
And it was like you all of a sudden seemed to have to take your gloves off.
Oh, I did.
Mm-hmm.
It was so horrible. And I had been accustomed to, I hadn't been accustomed to raising my voice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And because, well, people I've been around, you know, you didn't raise your voice.
Didn't need to.
No. Mm-hmm. So
would you say that there was a lack of refinement on your staff?
They were gross.
Okay.
And they put their, most unprofessional. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, Miss So-and-so, when you get through that, would you take care of them? I don't know whether I will or not.
Talk back at you, huh?
Oh, gross. And so, honey, they just had me so upset until I started losing hair. I went to see Dr. Rivers, who was the chief of surgery, and he was an extremely nice man, very fatherly. And he told me, Miss Mackay, one thing you got to learn to do is give them just what they gave you. Because, and until you do that, you're not going to get it. Now you start standing up for yourself. Because there's nothing wrong with what you're doing. And, but you just have to let them know who's in charge. So I thought about that. So I went back to the unit. And the very next time that I got lit, we had a metal disc that sat in the middle of the hallway. That's where the supervisor sat. So she, the wing went down, your wing went down there, then you had a wing going that way. And this woman said this to me, and I mean, she was black as the ace of spades. All in white. Immaculate. That's one thing. Everybody was immaculate. Shoes didn't have a speck of nothing on.
They dressed down.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, all nurses did in those days. You didn't see them dirty and sloppy like they are now.
Okay.
And so I got up from my desk.
Suppose you don't remember her name.
And I took the drawers out. Bam! Bam!
Slammed them back into the desk.
Bam! And took the chair and threw it up under the desk. I had everybody's attention. I said, now, if you don't want to do what I ask you to do, you go downstairs and tell Mr. I'll think of his name. Tell him that you don't want to do it. Because this isn't my husband. I just work here.
Cool.
And honey, and he was the superintendent of the hospital.
Yes.
And honey, I want you to know I didn't have no more problem at that.
How long did you work at
Off there a year. And then I went to the Visiting Nurse Association and worked there. And I gave prenatal care to mothers in their home.
You left on good terms from the hospital in New Orleans?
Not really.
But you were satisfied with what?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then, about a year after that, is when I passed through home. And I was coming home. And I got a call from a girl that used to work down there, and she was in charge of a hospital in Detroit.
Okay.
And she called me, and she wanted me to come to Detroit, Michigan. So that's how I got to Detroit.
And where did you work in Detroit?
I can't remember the name of the hospital. It was a small private hospital.
Your position?
Staff nurse. Mm-hmm. And then I had a chance to work, be one of the first 12 black nurses that were ever employed I can't think of the name of this hospital, but it was a TB hospital.
Where was it located?
In Detroit.
Okay.
They didn't have any but TB patients. But
TB meaning tuberculosis?
Tuberculosis patients. But it was run by the city of Detroit. And it was a huge, huge, huge building. And you had to take tests and all that kind of stuff. And there had been a lot of furor on because no blacks were being employed because it was a civil service position.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was about twice as much money. No, I didn't. I left that household. Then I went to another household. I can't think of the name of it now.
In Detroit?
Yeah, where I was the night supervisor. And that's where I was when my mother died.
Okay.
At this, because they had a lot of more or less small private hospitals in Detroit.
And you can't remember the name of any of those three hospitals?
Well, right now I don't.
Okay.
Because it's been so much, it's, my God, that's been so long.
I know. I'm just trying to get it out, and I know you'll get it later.
Well, I'll probably think of it later.
Sure.
And
what happened after Detroit? I mean,
isn't that funny? I can't think of the name of this hospital because everybody knows it. About it because it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there for a couple of years. But they wouldn't give me any promotion, even though I was eligible. And one of the reasons that they wouldn't, the director of nurses was a real slime. And what she was, we were treated terrible the first year we were there. If we got on the elevator, all the white nurses got off. We had to sit, we couldn't eat in the dining room where everybody else ate. They fixed up a part of the storeroom.
Segregation.
Oh, yes.
Capital S.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But we, I beg all of them to tough it out. Because after we've been there for 6 months, we get permanent status. Then we could open our mouths. I said, because it was civil service. And I said, just let's hang in here until we are permanent. Then we will get these people told.
Question. When you say, then you could open your mouths, what does that mean?
Complain.
Oh.
Demand.
Oh.
Give it to the newspaper.
Were there white nurses that were going through that probationary period that got the same kind of grief as you?
Well, of course not.
Okay. Check.
We were, because we were the first black nurses to ever be in that house. Now, they had black patients there.
Mm-hmm.
But we were the first black nurses to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one by one, they dropped by the wayside because they couldn't handle it. They just couldn't. They just could not handle it.
Out of the 12 that started, how many made it?
I don't really remember now. But I know at least 6 or 7 of them dropped out. But the rest of us stuck it out to the bitter end, and we got permanent status. And, but they would, I'm telling you, it couldn't have been any worse in the Deep South.
Yeah, I imagine.
Not any worse.
It was pretty bad, especially considering all the dues that you all had to pay just to get in a position to be able to be qualified for the job.
That's right.
You know, and then still taking that kind of crap.
That's right. That's right.
And where are they going to end, you know?
And yeah, they had to employ us.
Mm-hmm.
But they made it as hard as they could, hoping we would quit and go.
You make it sound, though, after you got the permanent status, that you really weren't happy with the place after a while.
No, because, see, the director was very outspoken. What she wanted me to do was to report on her the activities of the other people. And I told her I couldn't do that. See? And she didn't like me from that point on because I hadn't fallen in her little scheme.
Absolutely.
So as a result, I never got a promotion. And so, I guess I was there a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And finally I decided, you know, I'm tired of this. Maybe I was there 3 years. We were called the highest paid nurses in the world. They wrote us up in the newspaper one time. And the headline was the highest paid nurse. And we were. We made a big, big salary.
Okay.
And finally I just said, well, you know,
sounds like the artistic form just wasn't satisfying.
No, and you get tired of it after a while. And I used to work nights most of the time. Because I hated afternoons. Because of the fact you had no life at all when you worked afternoons. Because by the time you get, see, but it was unlight as the day where you got stuff going on, especially in California all night long. Stores open 7 days.
You mean in Michigan all night long?
Hmm?
You mean in Michigan all night long?
Yeah.
You say California.
Well, in California, something's going on 24 hours, seven days a week.
I misunderstood you. Okay.
So there's always someplace to go and something to do.
But not so in Michigan.
No, not in those days. I don't know what it's like now. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you know, you would be, when you get off at 11 o'clock at night, and by the time you get home and, you know, and wind down, here it's 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and then you go to sleep, and you see, and I've always been a morning person, so I would still wake up in the morning, and therefore I was tired. And no fun, and I was young. You know, I wanted to have fun. So it was sickening. So I used to work nights. And of course, a lot of people didn't like nights. And I was, because see, I'd get home in the morning, and I'd never be ready to go to bed as soon as I got home. But I would go to bed maybe an hour or two later. But I'd have time to do things, see my friends, and all that kind of stuff. And then I'd get up, and until 10 o'clock at night, I could have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always take a little, there's something about going to sleep when it's dark. And I'd be on duty at 11 o'clock. So anyhow, and it wasn't as hard to work at night either as it was during the day. Because you have a lot more activity during the day, because patients do go to sleep.
Okay.
And so, anyhow...
Where did you go from there?
That's when I sat down one day and I decided I was going to change my life. I had gotten married in the meantime. And after 4 years of really a lot of bitter unhappiness.
In the marriage?
Yeah. Because I was one of these people, nobody made me marry this man, so, you know, I'm going to try to do right and real religious and all that crap.
What was his name?
Chavis was his last name.
Okay. I'm
trying to think of his first name.
And,
I don't remember.
Your marriage lasted about 4 years, you
said. And I just got up one morning, I had come home from work, and I got up one morning and said, well, this is it. And I went on downtown to see a lawyer. And so, I'm trying to think, was I working at the TV hospital then?
Hang on. What was the name of the hospital?
Herman Kiefer was the name of the tuberculosis hospital that I worked in. I think I was there about 4 years.
This is the civil service?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And,
now, you decided to change your life.
Yes, I decided to change my life. And I said, well, I'm going back to school and get a degree in education. Because I'm tired of working on Saturdays and Sundays and holidays. And if I teach, I won't have to do that. And I liked teaching. See, I thought when I was coming up, when I was in high school, that I would never like teaching because I had worked so closely with my homeroom teacher, Miss Mary. Wish I could remember her last name, but it'll come to me. And I was so fond of her. And all this endless paperwork, you know, that's all I thought was involved in it. And it turned me off. But in the meantime, I wrote a letter to Captain Densberg, who was the director of the School of Nursing at the University of Minnesota at that particular time, and she was there when I was a student. And I wrote a letter to her and told her that I really wanted to come back to school and get my degree in education, and that would she let me know if there was any scholarship aid available. She promptly wrote a letter back to me and told me, don't worry about the scholarship aid, just come on. Words to that effect, see.
Okay.
Very, very encouraging. And, well, it's just like when I left the Minneapolis General Hospital. The director, she just had a fit. She tried to talk me out of going south.
Mm.
She said, you don't know what you're getting into. And she did everything she could. She said, well, why do you want to do this? And I said, well, you know, people in Minnesota and white people, they have a lot of people that are as good as I am. And I feel as though that what experience and opportunities for learning that I've had, I want to go share it with black people who haven't had the same kinds of opportunities. And I just feel that this is something I must do. But she kept me for an hour in her office trying to talk me out of this.
I'm sure. Now, this lady from U of M, who promptly wrote you back when you decided to change your life.
Yeah.
What did that result in?
Well, it resulted in me getting myself ready to move back to Minneapolis. And that was in 1944. Hmm. And so I was really excited because I said, well, I'm going back to school because I gotta do something better than this. And I had a lot of pain from this marriage, and it was just something that I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I proceeded to get everything packed up, loaded up, and by that time James came to Detroit, and of course, long before then. James was, he had gotten married in Minneapolis. He married a girl. She was a white girl.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was before I left Minneapolis, if I'm not mistaken.
That he got married?
Yeah.
Like while you were at the University of Minnesota?
No, it was after that, I think, because James had been married 3 times.
All right.
And he got married, and this girl's family lived in North Dakota, I think, or rural Minnesota. I forgot. Anyhow, father and mother came down because they were real, real disturbed about it. And she was a beautiful girl. And because they wanted to meet this boy, she wanted to meet his family. And they came to our house, and so after they met my mother and father, they felt a lot better about it. But that marriage didn't last long. He never had any children with that woman. It probably lasted a year, maybe 2 years at the most. But she was not right. But when I say she was not right, I mean my mother used to get very upset with her because when they first got married, they lived at home. And then they finally got an apartment. And she would come over and, you know, she was always telling my mother, "Do you see him looking at me over there?" And pulling her coat real tight and everything to show her shape, you know. Oh, my mother couldn't stand that.
I suppose not.
And she was flirty. That's the word to describe her. She was flirty. And anyhow, I don't remember the details of their breaking up, but I know that they did break up. And then James wanted to come to Detroit. So he came to Detroit. And he stayed with me. And he got a job as soon as he got there. But honey, he had so many clothes that my clothes, and I just had a one-bedroom apartment. But they were great big rooms. And then he had all these girls coming and calling because he was really a good-looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he really had a line of jive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you, and I came home one day and here this girl was sitting up in my house with him. Now, they were just sitting there on the couch. But I just told him, I didn't say anything to her. But I just told him that he could not entertain any women in my house. Because, see, back in those days, that was not considered right.
Mm-hmm.
That a woman would go, or a girl would go to a boy's house. That was just a no-no. Mm-hmm. And I just told him that he could not entertain any women in my house. And another thing used to make me mad, take his hat, because everybody wore hats, and put it on my lampshades, and had his clothes draped all over the house, and he was always tipping the lampshade up, saying it wasn't light enough in there for him, and all that kind of stuff. So finally, I told him, I said, "Listen here, boy. You know, I carried many a bit then to buy this furniture in this house, and pay this rent and keep it going. So now you go find yourself a